Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Glenn Sterner, Wade Smith, Jeremy Branham with you. Joining us now, John Harris, Texan sideline reporter and football analyst. John, why is tomorrow night the biggest game for the Texans this season?
I mean, it has to be because you lost the first one. You lost the first one, so you have no margin for error. And if they beat you, first of all, they go to 7-4. The Texans drop to 6-5. And now you need to get two games over them over the rest of the remaining schedule. And if you look at their schedule, you look at our schedule, they've got the Saints. We've got the Patriots. Other than that, I don't know where you're going to pick up extra games, because if you finish in a tie, they end up obviously taking the tiebreaker. So this one, the mathematical part of it, it's huge. But I think also just last week, I think a lot of people around the league went, yeah, the top two teams in the AFC are the Ravens and the Patriots and the Texans. Yeah, they're kind of that next tier. Well, the Colts are part of that tier as well. And, you know, I think there's a little bit of vindication, if you will, after the way they played on Sunday to get rid of that stench of that game from last week and get that out of their system and get a win against a really good physical football team, a team that's beaten you three times in a row. I think there are a lot of reasons for this one being the biggest one, the mathematical reason of, do you want to win a division? Yes. You check that box. Well, you can't lose this one, because if you're down two to the Colts, it's more than that, because they'll have the tiebreaker as we did against them in 2016.
John, what about last week, man? I mean, that was obviously 41-7. That's a tough one to take on the chin right there. But what and there's several reasons why it got to 41-7. But just a couple of quick takeaways of what went wrong last week. What could this team pull from last week's loss and actually be better this week?
Well, one of them I hope ends up being a vertical component to the passing game. They're just watching the Ravens as the game wore on. I kept seeing Earl Thomas and Chuck Clark closer and closer and closer to the line of scrimmage. And I just realized the Ravens really didn't respect the Texans' ability to throw the ball down the field. And when you think about a quarterback's job, including, you know this, when that umbrella is basically put at about 10, 11 yards because they know that you're not going to go beyond that, well, there are really no holes to throw the football. And you weren't running it extremely well until the fourth quarter when you gassed them for a few runs. You got to do that earlier. You got to try and get that run going earlier so you can keep drawing the safeties and then beat them behind them and then get those safeties to back up a little bit. Now you can hit your intermediate stuff. That, I think, was kind of the biggest thing to me offensively was that. They played the RPO stuff really, really well. I thought the Ravens had a really good plan. I think teams will try to emulate what the Ravens did. Now, can you? That's a big question. Do you have the personnel to do it? Do you have the secondary to be able to do it? That'll be one question for teams and one question for the Colts. But I do think the Texans put that behind them, get going on the Colts. They know the Colts well. The Colts know them. They've been able to move the football against them for the most part the last couple of years. They just have to put the ball in the end zone consistently. And on top of that, they can't shoot themselves in the foot. Now, they were out of Sunday's game before shooting themselves in the foot even mattered, or that it even mattered. They were out of it. So a false start wasn't going to make a huge difference. But in this one, you get down inside the red zone, you have a false start, you have an illegal procedure penalty, you have two-minute motion, illegal shift, you're not lined up right. You know, they did that against Baltimore one time on a third down that I believe negated a third down completion to Kenny Stills. So they've got to – in this one, clean some stuff up, but it just was a myriad of things. And look, let's give credit where credit is due. The Baltimore Ravens are a really, really good football team, and they caught fire again against a team that didn't play that well on that day. Maybe you see them down the road again. It would be kind of nice to see them and see if you can play at that level against them in a playoff game. But, you know, we've got a long way before we get there. You got to take care of your business, and the business this week ends up being these guys on Thursday night.
John, should the ability to challenge a pass interference be just completely removed from the game, or should we continue to go forward the way things are right now?
Wait, I think it does no good, really, to be honest. I mean, when Bill O'Brien threw the challenge flag on Sunday, I was about 10 feet away from it, and I was watching him to see if he was going to do it. But I knew full well throwing it wasn't going to do any good, really. I think Sean Pendergast put it best. I don't blame him for doing it because it's a monumental play in that game that if you get it, the ball's at the 1 yard line. I mean, it's basically, the Texans you would think could get 36 inches and get a touchdown. I mean, who knows what happens? Maybe you fumble it and they go the other direction. I don't know. But you at least think you're going to get the ball at the 1 yard line and score and make it 7-0, which is what you wanted to do. Start the game fast. I don't know if that's starting fast, but you get a lead on the road, and that just changes the vibe and everything on the sideline. That didn't happen. But I didn't have a problem with him throwing a challenge flag because, it was interference. Trust me, it was interference. Live, I thought for sure the flag was coming up. And live, Marlon Humphrey thought it was pass interference too. You could see him in the end zone. He's on his knees. He waits a good 5 seconds before he does the universal defensive back signal of no good or incomplete because he felt like interference was coming. And it was. Because on a 50-50 ball, when was the last time on a 50-50 ball you saw DeAndre Hopkins with the ball in the vicinity not get a hand on the ball? Never. So something went awry. So that to me, was interference. And Gene Steratore, I believe, said as much on the broadcast. I was listening to it on the plane and on the way home, and I was watching that part of it, and he said clearly, yes, that was interference. All the things you look for in interference are there. So those two officials missed in the back end, but I can see why the replay didn't overrule it. But to me, the replay on pass interference is just doing nobody any good. I mean, Bill O'Brien afterwards is like, I mean, pass interference essentially has turned into the catch. Like, what's a catch? Well, now we figured out what a catch is, but now we don't know what pass interference is. So it's like, dog chasing its tail in some sense. Just forget the replay review. I understand why it was pushed for after the Saints-Rams game. But that was a rare instance where it came up where it was so egregiously bad and they missed it. That, to me, is the thing. Now, I've heard some coaches say, well, do the sky ref. You're the ref in the sky, where the ref in the sky whistles down and says, that was interference, guys, you missed it. I can see that being somewhere that the NFL goes in due time, but I think they're wasting time by these pass interference challenges. They're not going anywhere with it.
I like the idea of the ref in the sky because, to me, it's punitive whenever a coach has to challenge for what could be a catastrophic play. Because, yes, Bill O'Brien had to challenge that play. And, yes, Bill O'Brien knew that the chances of him winning that challenge were probably slim. But he loses a timeout. He loses one of his two challenges. I think it's far too punitive for something he was probably right about, but he has no – he has no faith in the replay actually getting it right. We're being joined by John Harris, Texan sideline reporter and football analyst. John, when the injury report came out not that long ago, we saw Reed, Johnson, Adams out. Roby, Gibson, Fuller are questionable. How does that impact tomorrow night's game?
I think in a big way, and it goes back to one of my earlier thought about vertical component to the passing game. I think Will Fuller is that guy. Now, we've seen Kenny get down the field a little bit. And, Hop can go down the field. That's not his forte. He can. But I don't think teams are scared by Hop's vertical speed. But everybody is worried about Will Fuller's vertical speed. So hopefully Will's able to play. I mean, we'll see. Obviously, he's been questionable. And the Texans will play close to their vest, just like the Colts, with T.Y. Hilton. Now, I expect T.Y. Hilton to play, even though he's questionable. I'm expecting him to play. Maybe not the clown mask this time, but I'm expecting him to play. But those injuries in the back end, you're talking about the safety position. That was the freakiest thing with Mike Adams. That was so freaky in pregame. We're just standing out there. We're getting ready to do our pregame show. And I had one of my college buddies there, and his daughter, I was talking to them with my back to the field, and his daughter goes, oh, Mr. Harris, somebody just got hit. I'm like, what? I look down there, and Mike's on the field. So that pregame incident is now costing Mike that game against Baltimore and this game against the Indianapolis Colts, and it's costing the Texans because now you're down two safeties and potentially a third with Deshaun Gibson. I hope that if you have Bradley Roby back, you might play more corners in this one than you need safeties, but still, you got to have guys in the back end that can at least get people where you want to go. Jahlil Dye has played pretty well, I think, this year. So he's been rock solid. He'll step in to one of those roles. You might need A.J. Moore to have to play a little bit back there at safety, but the secondary, oh boy. I've been worried about it all year for different reasons at different times, and this one it's more about injuries. The corner position, I mean, if you have Roby back, then you've got Conley. Now, obviously, without Lonnie, but how much can you play Vernon Hargraves? How much does he know of the defense? Does he know enough to go in there and nickel and just be the inside guy to cover an inside, you know, Chester Rogers on routes? Can he do that? Those are the kind of things that are still questions, I think, heading into this. And I think the Colts will try and exploit that secondary again, but it's not a secondary playing Phillip Gaines, Keon Crossan, and Cornell Armstrong. And no offense to Keon and Cornell, those guys that they're special teams guys for a reason, because the guys in front of them are guys that can make some plays. They're first round picks. They're guys that you expect to be out on the field to be able to make plays against the Colts. Well, the Colts pretty much tore that secondary apart. Well, this secondary, at least the corner position, should be better going into this game against the Colts. But how much better? Is it better to a point where it can hold Brissett in check, that it can keep T.Y. Hilton under 70 yards and no touchdowns? Can it do that? That, to me, is the impact of not having Justin Reed, potentially Tashawn Gibson, not having Mike Adams to help out back there when you do sub-package stuff. That's where I think it ends up hurting you. The other aspect, and one that's not on the injury report, we know is such a big factor, is no J.J. Watt. In the game against the Colts, he was dominant. He didn't have any sacks, but he was dominant with the six pass rush pressures, and everybody in the building knew it, including Colts GM Chris Ballard, who was like, man, Watt destroyed us. And then you go, well, wait a second, he didn't have any sacks. Well, yeah, you don't need sacks to destroy a game, but he did all he could. Well, there's no Watt, so how are you going to get pressure? So if you don't have that pressure up front, that secondary's got to carry more of a burden, and now that secondary's banged up. So it's going to be a tough go for the defense against Brissett and company.
Johnny, talk to me a little bit about the communication coach on the field aspect of Justin Reed not being there. You mentioned that obviously it's from a personnel standpoint, it could be a little bit of a problem, but the corners are more important, are probably more important in this game than the safeties. What about Justin Reed's just the coach on the field, the communication aspect of what he brings to the Texans?
There's no question. And when you think about it, Clint, Justin Reed is what, the most senior player in the secondary outside of Jonathan Joseph? I mean, you know, Jahlil Dye got here in May, and Tashawn Gibson signed as a free agent back in late March. So you're talking about guys that don't have a ton of experience in this defense. Now, they're vets. They've been around the block, so they know it. Jahlil Dye is a great leader, and Tashawn Gibson is as well. But it's just a little different when you have Justin Reed back there, who's had a full year of experience last year, and is obviously working on a full year this year. Where I think it becomes a really big factor is if Vernon Hargraves is in the game, because Vernon's still learning this defense. So if he's got to communicate with linebackers playing on the inside, safeties, you know, communicating with Justin Reed, you know, Justin could give him hand signals to be like, okay, you're good. You know, hey, we're good. We've communicated. That's where I think if it could be a problem, that's where it might arise. And that's someplace where, you know, Romeo Crennel is really going to have to give a lot of consideration to how much he can use Vernon Hargraves, what kind of schemes he uses them in. And Vernon even talked about it in his press conference, or talking to the media on Monday or Tuesday. He said, look, my communication skills have got to be on point, because I've got to be able to communicate with everybody, the corner to my right, the linebacker to my inside, the safety behind me. Well, that safety behind you usually is the one that drives that communication. That's Justin Reed. Well, that's not Justin anymore. So Vernon's just going to have to be able to trust who's ever back there, and who's ever back there has got to make sure that whatever they got called, that everybody is on point. Everybody is lined up properly, including Vernon in his first action. Including Vernon, they've got to be ready to roll. Even last week against Baltimore, there were times where they'd have some guys banked up, and you got another guy coming in the game, and then there's Willie Snead lined up 10 yards from me, like nobody over him. Like, guys, you got to know where to line up, and that's where you do miss Justin Reed. And you miss him probably a little bit more when you have somebody like Vernon Hargraves playing his first game, presumably, for the Houston Texans this Thursday.
John, a few weeks ago, Darren Fells had 6 catches for 58 yards against the Raiders. And the past couple of weeks, you got the Jaguars game, 1 catch, 1 yard, 1 catch, 18 yards against the Ravens. And I would have never asked this question at the beginning of the season, but what do the Texans have to do to get Darren Fells back involved into the game plan? Because he seemed like he's disappeared over the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's a great question, Wade. I think the first thing starts with the guys up front. I think the protection's got to be at a premium. And against the Ravens, a team that like to blitz, I don't know if I'd use the word a lot, but they like to blitz. They like to set some people. And so Darren Fells had to protect a lot against the Baltimore Ravens. Now, against Jacksonville, it wasn't as much. But the other thing that the Baltimore Ravens did in taking away Darren Fells was they did a great job with the RPO stuff. They handled the RPO stuff brilliantly. There was hardly a time when an RPO, it's an option. You got to think somebody's open, right? Somebody's available. And really, the safeties and linebackers and the outside guys did a really good job taking away the RPO action for Deshaun Watson. So this week against the Colts, you've got to protect against the blitz. So Darren Fells is going to have to help with that. But beyond that, Darren Fells is going to have to get out and pass routes again. And it's going to have to be quick stuff. You're not going to be able to sit in the pocket against these guys rushing the quarterback. Justin Houston's going to be able to get back there. Jabal Sheard is the guy that always gives the Texans issues. Darren Fells, I think, becomes ultra important just short routes this week. Just, you know, Y option, just little five-yard hits. Just get him the ball and make them tackle that big dude down the field. I think that's where he gets involved in it. Test the Colts and see if they can handle some of the RPO stuff. If not, keep throwing it to Fells. But if they do start to handle it like Baltimore did, then you've got to be able to find ways to get Fells the football in open spaces when the Colts are playing zone against you. And he's got to prove that he can beat man coverage, which he can if you're going to end up putting a safety on him down the field. So I think it's going to be some short stuff that gets Fells going. I wouldn't be surprised to see Akins get going too. Akins is a guy I think can win some matchups against linebackers and safeties. And there were a couple times in the playoff game in particular where Akins was open on inside routes, kind of dig routes down the field where he maybe bent the seam route back to the inside because of the coverage over the top. And he was open, and they just weren't able to hit him because of the pressure that Deshaun was feeling that day. If they can give Deshaun some time to throw, I think Fells can find some open areas in between the hashes, in between the numbers, where he's able to do that like he did against Atlanta. So it doesn't have to be all just RPO stuff. But I would test Indianapolis and see if they're ready to handle the RPO stuff. And then I would try and get Akins and Fells involved in this passing game as much as I possibly could early on.
John, thanks so much as always. Look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
Absolutely, boys. Take care. We'll see you tomorrow.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.